Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm Ayen Deng-Bior in Washington. Here are some of the stories we're covering today, Friday, June 8, 2018. Kenya's Raila Odinga flies to South Africa for a one-on-one with Riek Machar.
He's trying his luck, and the fact that he's very close to a lot of South Sudanese leaders, especially the SPLM leaders, it means he's respected.
And what does the opposition say about a Kiir Machar meeting?
The agreement they brokered in 2015 has been violated and has been abrogated and is not working. Therefore, the first question that we should ask ourselves is, why did all this happen?
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Kenya's opposition leader, Raila Odinga, met with the leader of the SPLM-IO, Riek Machar, today in Pretoria, South Africa. A South Sudanese analyst says the meeting between Raila and Machar is an attempt to iron out the differences between President Salva Kiir and his former deputy. Professor James Okuk of Juba University says Raila is complementing what Sudan President Omar al-Bashir is doing to try to mediate a face-to-face meeting between the two leaders. Michael Atit reports for VOA from Juba.
Professor Okuk says Raila Odinga is an influential figure in the East Africa region and something good might actually come out of his meeting with Riek Machar.
He's trying his luck. And the fact that he's very close to a lot of South Sudanese leaders, especially the SPLM leaders, it means he's respected. So whatever he says, they could listen to him.
Okuk believes the recent move by both Kenya and Sudan to try to bring President Kiir and Machar face to face is a clear indication that previous rounds of IGAD-sponsored talks have not been effective in bringing about lasting peace in the country.
IGAD has failed to convince those parties, especially with the bridging agreement that they have presented, and it was rejected by all the parties. So that tells you that what IGAD has been doing has been rejected. So that's why now Kenya is moving and Khartoum is moving.
Okuk says if both Kenya and Sudan manage to get Machar and Kiir to speak honestly and directly to each other, and the two hammer out a deal to bring peace to South Sudan, it will be a great credit to both countries. He says the South Sudanese people have suffered enough.
If Kiir meet with Machar face to face, and then they strike a deal, it means they end the war, then they start to agree to work together for the sake of the country. And the whole thing will bring a new methodology than what is being used by the ICAT now. And that methodology could end the war in the country in a very faster manner than what we see from the ICAT.
Okuk says he expects the Kiir-Machar talks to take place fairly quickly, most likely in Khartoum. He suggests the international community get behind regional efforts to mediate direct talks between President Kiir and Machar. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit. In Juba.
The leader of the National Democratic Movement argues a Kiir Machar meeting will not end the conflict in South Sudan. Lama Cole says President Kiir is the main obstacle blocking the road to peace, and his gesture of peace to Machar is not genuine. Cole says the conflict has spread across the country, and it requires the wider participation of all leaders of the various warring parties in search for peace. He says President Kiir is famous for not respecting previous peace deals.
Of course, the meeting of any group of politicians in South Sudan is always welcome because it encourages the spirit of dialogue among the parties. But always the issue is on what is the substance of the discussion, is what concerns people. But just a meeting, nobody will have a problem in any two leaders meeting each other.
But these two leaders have not been seeing each other eye to eye. One of the reasons why there is all concerted effort to make them meet is to ensure that they sit together and bring an end to the conflict in the country. Do you think the meeting of the two leaders will end the violence in the country?
But Salva Kiir has not also been seeing others, not only the leader of the SPLM-IO, he has not also been seeing the rest of the leaders of the opposition. So there's nothing new about that.
You made some statements this week saying going back to the status quo is not a solution to this conflict. What is the solution to this conflict?
If IGAD is to be consistent with itself, the current negotiations are brought about by the fact that the agreement they brokered in 2015 has been violated and has been abrogated and is not working. Therefore, the first question that we should ask ourselves is, why did all this happen? And why is it that there is a new round of conflict that has gone beyond the initial one to cover the whole country? All this is because a certain Salva Kiir, who was president in government of South Sudan, vowed from the very beginning that he will not implement the agreement, and he went ahead violating it until he abrogated it. So how can you again come and say that the same person who has done all this can be given the responsibility to do it again, unless people are not serious about the lives of the South Sudanese?
The IGAD High-Level Revitalization Forum has been going on and on. There was a cessation of hostility agreement signed, but most of the warring parties did not respect that agreement. Fighting continued. Until today, we still hear about fighting in some parts of South Sudan. What is it that the leaders of the country will do different if they are given the responsibility to run this country?
I'm agreeing with you that what will they do different from what they are doing now? And I would proceed with an answer. You see, if you look at who is violating the cessation of hostilities, it is the government. And the CITESAM reports are there for people to see, although some quarters have been trying to suppress publishing those reports. So it is a government led by Salva Kiir. If he cannot even respect the cessation of hostilities agreement, how will he respect a peace agreement that will apportion the responsibilities to different people?
If one of the leaders of the South Sudan opposition alliance is given an opportunity to lead this country today, what would they do different that will really end this conflict?
What they will do different, of course, is that first they are committed to peace. You know, when they sign a peace agreement, it means that they are going to abide by it and respect its provisions. This is number one, because if you lack the political will, you can never do anything. Secondly, they will have a program that they can implement in order to bring the country to where it should be. Now the country is being run haphazardly. Nobody knows who is even the power center, whether it is the Jin Council of Elders or what is the realm of people who call themselves the SPLM, IG. You never know who is running the country in South Sudan.
Looking at the documents coming from Addis Ababa, it looks like before the end of this month, there will be another agreement signed between the government in Juba and the various opposition groups.
Let me assure you, nobody will ever impose an agreement on the people of South Sudan. So whatever, anything that is coupled together without taking into consideration the interests of the people will never work. The same way the agreement of 2015 did not work, another one which is done in a hurry and meant to serve individuals will also not work.
That's Lam Akol, leader of the National Democratic Movement. He was speaking from an undisclosed location with my colleague John Tanza earlier today. The World Health Organization and South Sudan Health Ministry officials say they are working to prevent the spread of malaria and an outbreak of cholera as the rainy season intensifies. Nearly every year, somewhere in South Sudan, there is a cholera outbreak between April and June. Officials say they will distribute nearly a million mosquito bed nets and try to stop the spread of the disease. Dimo Silva Aurelio has more for VOA from Juba.
WHO and South Sudan Health Ministry officials say during the rainy season many areas flood across the country, prompting the risk of cholera and malaria for many people. Dr. Makur Matur Koriam, Undersecretary of South Sudan's Health Ministry, is urging the public to take the necessary precautions to prevent the spread of malaria and cholera.
The rainy season started very, very early in March. in many parts of the country. And we have witnessed outbreaks of cholera in the previous years occurring between May and early June. I mean, between April and early June. We are now in early June. We are in the period of the outbreaks occurrences compared to the previous history. And given the situation of the rains at the moment, the risk is quite high, but there is no case of cholera up to date.
In February, South Sudan's health authorities declared the end of the longest cholera outbreak with more than 20,000 cases and 436 deaths reported across the country. The risk of cholera is greater in several parts of South Sudan, where access to clean water and sanitation facilities are spotty at best. Koryom says the rainy season will most likely increase this risk and directly affect the speed and range of transmission of the disease. Koryom is urging the South Sudanese to practice proper hygiene, including washing hands vigorously with soap, to prevent the spread of cholera.
Then we have walked around and we have greeted so many people. Eventually, we need to wash our hands. We need to cook our food very well. And if we have cooked it and kept it cool for some time, we have to recook it, so that it gets warmer and hot before we eat it. We have to wash our fruits, our vegetables thoroughly before we eat them. Drink clean water. And if there's no clean water, you boil whatever water that you have and drink it safely. Sleep under mosquito nets.
As part of the emergency preparedness, French medical group Doctors Without Borders, or MSF, provided an anti-cholera oral vaccine to more than 200,000 people, ranging from the age of 12 months to adults in areas of Juba where people were identified most at risk in the previous cholera outbreaks. Undersecretary Koryom says malaria is taking its toll, with nearly 770,000 cases and 99 deaths reported since the beginning of the year.
From the beginning of the year in January up to date, we have had more than 760,000 cases of malaria, out of which there has been 99 deaths. That accounts for like 0.012% of the mortality from malaria, what we call a case fatality rate.
WHO says it has procured treated mosquito bed nets to be distributed in malaria-prone areas of South Sudan. Lincoln Charimari, who runs the WHO's Malaria Control Office, says it will work with Population Service International to distribute hundreds of thousands of bed nets in July.
We expect to distribute 885,000 nets, and this will cover approximately about 540,000 people in Western Barra Gazal and 908,000 in Western Equatoria. So we do hope that by the time the peak season of malaria ends, all these nets will have been distributed to the populations at risk in those areas.
Both the South Sudan Health Ministry and WHO say they are strengthening coordination and are enhancing rapid investigations and response time to suspected outbreaks. For VOA News, I am Dimo Silva Aurelio in Juba.
You're tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. A new report finds three major problems in countries like South Sudan rob children of a better life. Find out what they are when we come back.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
is there one song that you love to sing? What is it? Sing a little for us.
I stand amazed in your presence. There is nothing you want to. It's a gospel song that just says every time you're in God's presence, you're just amazed. There's nothing he can't do.
My favorite song is John Legend, All of Me. Let me sing the chorus. All of me loves all of you.
A song that I'd love to sing is Circle of Life, that was sung in The Lion King, the first movie. So the beginning goes, Natimenya sebabisi babayo siyo gwenyama.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus. Save the Children reports progress is being made in children's health, education, and security in sub-Saharan Africa. But it also finds that in many countries, including South Sudan, poverty, conflict, and discriminations against girls are ruining young people's chances of preparing for adulthood. From Washington, VOA reporter Bill Eagle has the story.
Save the Children's 2018 End of Childhood Index shows that slightly more than half of the 49 sub-Saharan nations surveyed had made improvements over the previous year in child school registration, nutrition, and health care. Among the countries in this group are Uganda, coming in at number 130, Somalia, 170, and Sierra Leone, number 167. Despite the gains, Tunisia, at number 48, is the only sub-Saharan nation in the top 50 in the rankings, and half were in the bottom 30, with Niger at number 175, the very last. Almost all of the worst-performing states suffer from three key factors that most harm children: poverty, conflict, and discrimination against girls. Those include Burkina Faso, the Democratic Republic of Congo, Nigeria, Somalia, Chad, Mali, and Niger. South Sudan is rated the fifth worst out of the 175 nations surveyed, with the highest rate of children out of school in the world, 67%, and the second highest rate of displacement globally, that is, 31% displaced. It's also among the nations with the highest rates of child marriage at 40%. Eric Hazar is Save the Children's Advocacy Director for West and Central Africa. He says despite its economic power, Nigeria's battle in the northeast against the Boko Haram militants has harmed its children.
So, for example, if you take the state of Borno in northern Nigeria, which is one of the state which is affected by the conflict, there is more than 1,400 schools which have been destroyed in Borno, and there is currently close to 60% of the schools who are closed. This means access to education as a fundamental right for children is seriously at risk today in a couple of northern states in Nigeria.
He says gender discrimination in the north means large numbers of girls are denied education, and Nigeria has one of the highest rates of child marriage in the world. The effects of early marriage show up in population growth. Save the Children says globally, given that child marriage rates are not falling much, the number of adolescent pregnancies is set to grow, with the largest increases expected in Africa. African governments and education systems already are struggling to keep up with population growth. Hazar notes that in Africa, more than one out of five children aged 6 to 11 are out of school, one of the worst rates in the world, even though some countries such as Niger are improving access to education.
If you take a country like Niger, which is the last one in the ranking, we can see that there is a couple of progress which have been done in Niger to ensure that children can get access to schools. But when you see the investment which have been done last year and the previous year, I think the number of schools which have been built just represents a third of the needs to respond to the existing gap or the current gap, which means that when you try to invest into some basic infrastructure to try to absorb the gap, you are even not able to anticipate some further needs in a country where the population is doubling every generation, so every 20 years.
Save the Children makes several recommendations for improving the lives of children. For example, it says girls could be given scholarships and free transportation so they can get safely to school. It encourages governments to adopt action plans to boost national resources by improving tax systems or shifting budget priorities to eliminate child poverty. Save the Children says without urgent action, the world will not meet the United Nations Sustainable Development Goals, which aim to ensure that by 2030, every child survives, learns, and is protected. I'm William Eagle in Washington.
Kenyan authorities have discovered the wreckage of a Cessna C-208 airplane that crashed on Tuesday in a mountainous region of the country. The bodies of 8 passengers and 2 crew members have also been retrieved from the site of the crash. As Maureen Ojiambo reports from Nairobi, President Uhuru Kenyatta has promised an investigation into the cause of the crash.
Just asking the government if anything can be done for them at least to reach them early, because we also know time, yeah? If they are safe wherever they are, as time goes by.
We were not updated concerning the whereabouts of our beloveds. Again, the management of the plane that our beloved had boarded, they were not even updating us, and so we were worried not to know what to do.
That was their hope before the chairperson of the FlySax company broke the sad news to the victims of the disease. Charles Wako said there were no survivors among the 8 passengers and 2 crew members that were on board the plane that crashed at the peak of the Aberdare mountain ranges.
It is with a heavy heart that I wish to inform you that we have received information that there are no survivors in the recent incident that we had.
The site is very, very high up in the mountain, and the clouds were like 8,000 feet, and the accident site is at 11,900 feet deep inside the cloud. So visibility was very limited.
The Cessna C-208 aircraft registration number 5YCSC left Kitale in Trans Nzoia County at around 4 p.m. on Tuesday for Nairobi, but lost contact with the control tower at 5:20 p.m. local time the same day. Kenya's Permanent Secretary for Transport, Paul Maringa, described the crash as unfortunate and that investigations are being carried out by the government to establish the cause.
Ladies and gentlemen, a mountain rescue team from the Kenya Wildlife Service has reached the wreckage of the aircraft. Unfortunately, from the reports we are getting, there are no survivors. The families of the passengers and the crew have been notified. And as a ministry, and speaking on behalf of government, we truly regret this very sad outcome and send out our heartfelt condolences to the bereaved families. We want to assure you that investigations into the probable cause of the accident have commenced and they'll proceed on in earnest, and we should be able to call you back in here again to confirm the results.
On Thursday, President Uhuru Kenyatta led Kenyans in mourning the victims of the plane crash as he vowed to probe into the tragedy. The bodies of the victims have been transported from Nyandarua County to Nairobi's Lee Funeral Home for identification. It was a heavy Thursday night for relatives of the victims after the arrival of the bodies of their loved ones at Lee. An investigation continues into the cause of the crash. Authorities are looking bad weather as one of the possibilities. The tragedy comes barely 8 months after another plane crash that claimed lives of 5 Kenyans in Lake Nakuru. Reporting for VOA's, I am Maureen Ojiambo in Nairobi, Kenya.
A Minnesota teenager is the first American to win the prestigious Dubai International Quran Recitation Contest. For VOA, Mahmoud Mahadeh has the story from Minneapolis.
Ahmed Burhan Muhammad received a hero's welcome on his return to Minnesota after the 16-year-old topped more than 100 competitors at the Dubai International Quran Recitation Contest.
Yeah, I was pretty surprised. They told me I was top 10, but I didn't know what place I was going to get, so alhamdulillah.
Muhammad is the first American to win the $68,000 prize. Joining the Somali American at the top of the ranks was a strong showing by Africans, with the contestants from Libya, Tunisia, and Algeria placing second, third, and fourth, respectively.
The competition was very competitive. I was competing with 103 contestants from all around the world, some of them countries I never have heard of in my life, Caribbean islands, all over, everywhere.
Muhammad came to the United States when he was 2 years old, and credits his parents and teachers with helping him win the 22nd edition of Dubai contest, which is one of the most prestigious in the Muslim world. Muhammad says he started studying the Quran when he was 7 and memorized the entire text within 5 years. Muhammad's father, Burhan Muhammad Ilmi, says all the help for his son has paid off.
We put a lot of effort into helping him, and the teachers put in huge efforts as well.
Sheikh Abdul Razzaq Hashi is the imam of Abu Bakr Islamic Center, where Muhammad studied. He says the win in Dubai is a huge achievement for all Muslim Americans.
The American media is proud of Burhan's win. All we want as a community was to show Americans that they can be proud of us, and this win shows that we have achieved that accomplishment. Now we are hoping Americans see the goodness of Islam and Muslims as well as the quality of American Muslims living in the U.S.
Ahmed Burhan Muhammad will enter his final year of high school later this year and says he hopes to become a doctor. Mahmoud Mas'adi for VOA News, Minneapolis.
A Kenyan teacher who was scheduled to be an assistant referee at the upcoming World Cup has quit after being caught up in a match-fixing sting operation. The BBC released a documentary today on African football corruption that it says caught more than 100 referees taking money. Adele Range Marwa was the only Kenyan referee chosen to work the Moscow World Cup. The documentary says he accepted a $600 bribe from a BBC journalist posing as a Ghanaian soccer club official. Marwa has resigned. He would have gotten at least $25,000 for refereeing football's biggest event. FIFA had approved him for international matches since 2008. He worked the 2017 Confederations Cup, a World Cup warm-up event, and went to the Brazil World Cup as a backup official. The Ghana National Football Association has been dissolved after its president, Kwesi Nyantakyi, allegedly took a fake $65,000 bribe. FIFA banned a Ghanaian referee, Joseph Lamptey, for life for awarding a penalty in a World Cup qualifying game in 2016 in a betting scam. And that's our show for this Friday. We leave you with the song Yagander Gubel with Hamlea Abate. We've been listening to Hamelma U Abate with the song Yagander Gubel. I'm Ayen Bior in Washington. Thanks for listening. Let us know how you like the show. You can find us on the web at SouthSudan@voanews.com or reach us on Facebook. Our title is South Sudan in Focus. Have a peaceful weekend and join us again on Monday for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Ka
ከሸጋዎቹ መንደራሄ ከፋሲል አገር ከፋሲል አገር የአገሬ ጉብል ጉብል